Welcome to episode one of the If We Did It podcast, where we tell you how we would do something if we did it.
I feel like that's not the right note to start with.
Who gives a shit?
We'll see, I guess.
Okay. On episode one, we will be discussing Saltburn.
Saltburn, the Amazon original.
Isn't Amazon original?
Well, they produced it, yeah.
That hurts my heart.
And it's not the Amazon original type of movie where it immediately went to streaming.
Like Air. Oh, well, Air had a theatrical run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As did Saltburn. Hit. Is it a hit? Should I look up the box office?
I'd call it a hit. Yeah, check the Rotten Tomatoes.
It's certainly a cultural moment.
Box office. I wonder what the budget on this thing was.
As of the 17th of January, 2024, Saltburn had grossed $11.4 million in the United States and Canada, $9.6 million in other territories.
And boy, did it gross.
That's... For a total of $21 million. Now that, I would not think of as a box office success. So maybe...
What was it? Did it make his budget?
I don't know. Should we look it up? $10 million to $38
million. That's a big range.
Okay, so we don't know if Saltburn made its budget back.
That's a huge range.
You know, but...
I think it's going to get cult classic. I think this is going to be a cult classic.
And I think there's a benefit to having your movie be so easily streamed, because, you know, maybe it didn't make that much money at the box office, but people are talking about it.
They released it fast.
Yeah.
And it's free with Prime.
Yeah.
That definitely got people to watch it. Like, people will watch anything that's free with Prime.
And people are watching this. Like, people that I usually think wouldn't be that into some weird gay art house erotic thriller, whatever the fuck this movie
is. Yeah, art house. It's definitely an art house feel. I don't know if it actually... It feels like that, but I don't know if it is that. Like, it's very clearly trying to evoke that sensibility, but if you got a $38 million budget, how art house are you really,
I think? That's true. And, I mean, it's Amazon, you know? Like, it's not even, like, A24. It's fully the biggest company in the world.
Exactly.
Movie,
well, so. Amazon wants that A24 demo.
Yeah,
they do. They crave the A24 demo.
It's been really growing over the past couple of years. We're both drinking on mic.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to be enjoyable.
I just think this is a great movie for us to start out the podcast with, because it's very recent. It's from either November or December of last year. It's controversial.
Controversial.
I thought it was going to be terrible, because I had only heard bad reviews. And then I was like, well, I have to see it, because it's a movie from last year. I want to keep up. People are talking about it. And I saw it, and I thought, oh, maybe that wasn't so bad, you know? Maybe I certainly had a fun time watching it, and I thought it was very beautifully made, and I was very impressed from the get-go of how it looked.
See, that's interesting. I thought it was definitely, I thought it was going to be, like, the best thing since sliced bread. I thought it was, like, this is going to be amazing.
Really?
Like,
and what were you going on with that?
In Prague, I had a friend, Luke, who is, like, he goes to Columbia. He's very up on, like, festival films and, like, following everything that's coming out. Uh-huh. And was extremely, extremely excited for Saltburn.
Cool, okay. And it's directed by, is her name Emerald Fennell?
I think so.
Director of Promising Young Woman, which I have not seen.
We talked about that. Promising Young Woman.
Have you seen it?
I haven't seen Promising Young Woman.
I know it was a cultural moment and was also divisive.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's just what Emerald does.
Shout out movies with women in the title. Little Women. Little 20th women. Century Women. I need to see that.
Woman Under the Influence.
I haven't seen that. Gone Woman. Also featuring Rosamund Pike.
Gone Woman. Should we?
I think we should. Yeah, let's get to the plot.
So, shout out Wikipedia. We did not write this plot summary.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
But we both have notes. We both just watched this film.
Wikipedia's been relentlessly emailing me.
Why do they have your
funding
email
for funding? Because I paid them $2 once.
Oh, yeah, that's your first mistake. No, I genuinely I always feel bad when I, feel like I see those things.
I just use Wikipedia so much. I should be paying.
It makes sense. It really makes sense, and they're a great platform, and they really know how to guilt trip you. Because they say...
It's only $2.
They say, we ask you, humbly, do not scroll away.
Humbly ask my nuts in your mouth. All right. Saltburn plot.
So, okay. This is a early point of confusion in the film, because Barry Keoghan's character, Oliver Quick, enters Oxford.
Love that name.
We're meant to believe that he's a freshman and that he's there for the first time. I thought so, at least. And it says, welcome class of 2006. But apparently also the film takes place in 2006. Maybe that's how the British people do it.
Maybe that's how they do it. Maybe they do it in entry year.
Maybe. That's who knows? A little silly.
Who knows why the British do what they do?
It's true.
They're a backwards, short-sighted people.
Well, we're gonna be getting into that. I think... there's maybe some forced comparisons between the British and American in this movie.
Is Emerald Fennell British?
I have no idea. Should I look it up?
That'd be interesting to find out, I think.
Yeah, she was born in the UK.
That would do it.
Hammersmith.
They think they're
London,
better than us. They do.
UK. But I think... well, okay, we'll get into it. Should I save my criticisms for...
I think we just get through the summary...
Yes, okay. A scholarship student, Oliver Quick, struggles to fit in at the University of Oxford because of his inexperience with upper-class manners. Do you think that's... I guess that is made clear in the movie. Like, he obviously feels like an outsider.
Mm. I didn't think it was manners. I thought it was he's poor and they don't like him.
Yeah. And people overtly say that in the movie.
Or poor, you know, whatever.
Well, yeah, yeah.
We'll get to that.
There were air quotes with that mm-hmm. second pour for the listeners at home.
I gotta not do that.
You gotta say quote unquote.
I pour. Talk with my hands too much.
Yeah. When Oliver becomes distraught. Oh, wait. He befriends Felix Catton, played by the luminous Jacob Elordi.
Luminous Jacob Elordi.
We'll talk about Jacob Elordi.
Is that editorializing?
Oh, yeah. That's oh, good. Yeah. An affluent and popular student who is sympathetic to Oliver's stories of his parents' substance abuse and mental health issues. Should I get through the
plot? Let's just get through it.
Okay, and then we can talk about these actors and mm-hmm. what we think of them.
There's a lot of air quotes in this one.
When Oliver becomes distraught over his father's sudden death, Felix comforts him and invites him to spend the summer at his family's country house, Saltburn.
That's an awesome name.
It is.
Saltburn is such a good title.
Like, yeah, you know the movie is going to be at least a little gnarly when it's called Saltburn.
I thought it was going to be about, like, tequila. Like, genuinely, when I saw it, I was like, Saltburn, they're, like, in college, it's like...
yeah.
You know, I don't, it's like you're taking the,
he
taking
just
the tequila
licked his
shots.
Hand for the listeners at home.
I had a few too many of those last night.
Oh, okay.
Okay, we got okay. a cool guy over here.
At Saltburn, Oliver meets Felix's eccentric parents, Sir James and Lady Elspeth.
Elspeth. His you sister. Hate Elspeth as a name.
I hate Elspeth as a name. I think it's just a weird, fucked up version of Elizabeth, and it makes me uncomfortable to say.
I think it's perfect for the rich, crazy people.
I think it fits. It genuinely makes me feel ill to say that word. Mm. So I'm going to avoid saying
well,
her
yeah,
name.
But she can be the 20 billionth Diane in the UK or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess they did it on purpose.
I think they did.
His sister Venetia and Elspeth's friend Pamela, as well as Felix's American cousin Farley, that's F-A-R-L-E-I-G-H, with whom Oliver has had a tense relationship as classmates at Oxford.
This is the driest description.
It is. Well, we're about to get a little less dry.
It's a little wet, if you will.
In the next sentence, Oliver quickly wins over Felix's family, except for Farley.
Quickly.
And His obsession with Felix grows. One night after watching Felix masturbate in a bathtub, he lustfully drinks the semen-laced bathwater.
Laced. Laced is a choice.
Like it's fentanyl. Later, having seen Venetia waiting outside his bedroom window, he performs oral sex on her while she is on her period. Are we skipping past all that now and getting back to it later?
Let's just get back to it later.
Okay. Farley witnesses this and informs Felix, but Oliver claims nothing happened when Felix confronts him.
Farley witnesses this and says, "Oh, you stupid boy."
He is lying on his stomach.
Kicking his heels.
Does he have binoculars or
no? He does not.
Picture binoculars.
Oh my god.
But like when you.
Does he. Binoculars. He's got opera glasses.
Lying on his tummy, kicking his feet, looking out his window. You like, gotta think binoculars.
Like Lea Seydoux in Dune 2.
Okay. Yeah, shout out Dune 2.
A lot of DNA between that scene with Lea Seydoux in Dune 2 and a lot of Saltburn.
You know what? I was thinking about Dune 2 as we were watching the movie because I apparently cannot tell the difference between Richard E. Grant and Christopher Walken.
Really? No, they do look similar.
I saw Christopher Walken as the Emperor in Dune 2 when we just saw it this past Friday.
I think
it
kicked ass.
And I was like, why was Richard E. Grant in Saltburn and then in this? Like, this man is old. Why is he so busy?
He's been typecast as a fucking crazy old guy.
Well, yeah, but
I think he kind of has.
That was Christopher Walken. So, sorry, Christopher.
Sorry, Christy.
Don't kill me like you drowned Natalie Wood.
In what?
In real life. No, he didn't actually drown her, but it's possible that if you believe Natalie Wood was murdered on purpose, that Christopher Walken had something to do with it. Because
much like Princess Diana, murdered on purpose.
Shout out the Queen Mother for crashing that car.
Shout out old dead lady.
At night, I skipped a line. Farley witnesses this and informs Felix, but Oliver claims nothing happened when Felix confronts him. At night, Oliver initiates sexual advances on Farley, threatening him in the process. The next morning, James evicts Farley.
Evicts is great. I think we gotta... No offense to the Wikipedia synopsis of Saltburn, I think we gotta pick it up
It'll
a little bit.
It'll get more juicy, okay? Well, I guess it's already pretty
I think
juicy.
We can do this from memory. We just saw the movie. They kick Farley out because he was maybe stealing a plate.
Intention to sell some of James's valuables.
Yeah. And then Oliver informs them of his birthday, which they plan a big party for.
Yes.
And as a surprise, Felix takes him on a trip.
Ooh. To Prescott with one T, I'm learning from the Wikipedia, which
you
is...
You thought it was two T's you were hoping?
I was hoping it was two T's, because
Maddie's
two
middle
T's
name.
Is my middle name. Shout out John Prescott in the Revolutionary War.
And it is revealed that Oliver is a big fat fucking liar.
Yes.
That his family is completely normal, middle class.
Yes, upper middle class, suburban. Both parents are alive. Not on drugs. He has sisters. He's not an only child.
Not an only child.
And Jacob Elordi's acting in this scene was great.
Very, truly phenomenal.
It was
like,
really great.
Regardless of the things that I'm going to say about this movie, the performances are amazing throughout.
Across the board, honestly. Maybe Farley is the one.
Yeah, but he's chewing the scenery. He's a fucking... that's his role in the movie.
I think it is maybe sometimes hard for me to distinguish, if an actor's performance is making my skin crawl. I don't know if it's like that on purpose or not.
I think he's like that on purpose.
Yeah, I think definitely he is. Like, the butler, Duncan, made me
want
to rip my skin off every time he was on screen. But he was supposed to do that.
He was.
No shade to whoever played Duncan
Big
the
dunk,
footman.
Big Dunk.
The Dunk Man. Yeah, so... are we summarizing on our own?
Yeah,
Felix takes him back.
Discovers he's a fucking liar. They have like a falling out.
Yeah.
He says, "I'm gonna kick you out of Saltburn tomorrow, but enjoy your birthday party."
Yeah.
And
terrible birthday party.
Terrible, genuinely terrible birthday party. He knows no one at this party.
Yeah. Which is sad.
Sir James is so excited to be wearing his armor.
which is really cute.
Yeah. Oh my god, that might be the best line delivery in the movies. Elspeth, I get to wear my suit of armor.
He's really good.
He's such a dope. Which is so great.
Okay.
And then at the party, Oliver is following Felix around,
yes,
sort of mopey, like a little kicked puppy.
Down the hedge maze.
Catches him fucking in the hedge maze.
Fucking this girl named India.
Slinging ween in the hedge maze.
Yeah.
On
a statue of
the Minotaur.
Ooh.
Maybe that means something.
Well,
maybe they just thought it looked cool. Who's to say?
Are we discussing that later?
We'll discuss it later. We can talk about it now. I think the Minotaur thing is objectively the coolest reading of the movie, that it's like a retelling of Theseus and the Minotaur.
I don't know if I totally buy it.
I don't buy that it's intentional, but it's a cool read of the movie. Like, I don't think they were like... I think they said, there's a maze, there's a Minotaur... Let's do something with that.
Sure,
like, they're crazy rich people.
Yeah.
They don't see the irony of, like, that. But I don't think Oliver's Theseus, which is, like, what our friend Mel says, is that Oliver's Theseus. Oliver is Theseus, and Jacob Elordi is the Minotaur.
I think Oliver wants to be Theseus.
I think Oliver is the Minotaur.
What makes him the Minotaur?
He's got horns. He's got horns and he kills a bunch of folks.
Yeah.
I thought, in that maze scene, the first time I watched it, when he walks in and he's got, like, the antlers and the thing, I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, is he a fairy? Like, is he supposed to be, like, a... No,
because he's gay.
No, like... Holy shit. Yeah.
Noted homophobe,
Jasper Wigmans of the If We Did It podcast. No, is he like a Shakespearean fairy, like Oberon? Like the antlers is like such an eerie image of him in silhouette with the antlers following like an angelic figure. Jacob Elordi is dressed up as an angel for this party.
This is true. He is angelic.
I wondered actually if that was like a Romeo and Juliet kind of thing. Because Juliet at the party in the Baz Luhrmann thing is dressed as an angel.
This is true.
That's kind of throwaway.
Is Leo dressed as the knight?
Yeah.
That would make his dad
it's
Leo.
It's a role reversal. Tragic figure.
Okay.
Reference
okay.
To fated death.
It's a loose Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, it's super loose.
It's also
a
loose Minotaur.
I'm having fun
metaphor.
With it. No, I think it's all loose. The movie's loose.
It's a very loose. Yeah, this is true. This is accurate. And I think you have to be loose.
It's based on this old, like, a huge influence for this is based on an old British TV show about rich people just hanging out for a summer.
What show?
I don't remember what it's called. My mom rewatched the whole thing after she watched Saltburn.
Wait, really?
Yeah, Emerald Fennel has been open. This was a huge inspiration for the film. It's called, like, Last Summer at Canterbury Manor or something. It's some fucking ridiculous, manor name. But it's so close to the movie. Like, the scenes of them just hanging out.
Yeah.
It was, like, in the original show, it's played straight.
Yeah.
That, like, these people are, like, foppish and useless. But it reads like satire watching it back. Fucking, they're just sitting there. They're doing nothing. They're just like, Mommy! Daddy! And it's so just like the movie. It's so just like Saltburn. In the, in, like, the tone of the hanging out shit. And it's so weird. And that I feel like a lot of that DNA is definitely still in this thing.
Yes.
And that's loose, because nothing happens in that show.
I love a show like that.
Mm-hmm. I love movies like that. There's almost no plot to Saltburn until there is a plot to Saltburn.
Which, speaking of which... Next morning, Felix is found dead.
Because he drank too much.
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe, potentially.
Who's to say?
I thought when I first watched it, I thought we were supposed to think that he killed himself.
Really?
Yeah.
That's wild. I knew Oliver killed him, but I was like, I knew Oliver at least thought he killed him. Like, I thought maybe he was like, oh, I left the bottle of wine.
And that's what
and it was,
put
he was
him
like,
over the edge.
Alcohol poisoning, he threw up and choked or whatever.
I thought, well, okay, this was before, I think I was still trying to read the movie. The first time I watched it, I was still trying to read the movie through the, like, this is a movie about rich people bad,
mm-hmm.
Which I don't think is what the movie is doing at all.
But, I don't think it is either.
Oliver gives Felix that speech in the maze underneath the Minotaur statue. Mm-hmm. He says, I wrote it down.
Sorry, I didn't play my role well enough.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just giving you what you wanted, just like everyone else.
He says, everyone puts on a show for Felix. And, I mean, that's crushing. And I thought that was maybe something that could send Felix over the edge, but we don't know what his emotional reaction to
that is. I thought that was a really amazing piece of writing that is absolutely obliterated by the conclusion of the film.
Yeah, basically.
Because I don't
I think so too.
Because this is the crux of the I think the my problem with Saltburn is
the ending.
Not just the ending, the ending reveals that it was premeditated apparently nearly 20 years.
Yeah, that's another thing. Well, I guess we'll get there in two Wikipedia paragraphs, but 20-year time
is
skip.
Is he an amazing actor who is acting even to himself all the time? Because, like, if he isn't just in love with Felix, why is he licking cum out of a bathtub?
I think he is in love with Felix.
Why is he fucking a grave? Like,
exactly.
I think he is in love with Felix and he's in denial of it. But if you're in love with Felix, you clearly planned to kill him the instant you entered the maze. It shows it in the flashback that he's pouring poison in. So why is he doing that speech? He doesn't need to do that speech at that point. Who's that for? It's for us. It's for the audience.
It's for us, but I think it's something he was feeling deep down, and so even though he knew Felix was about to die, he wanted to say it anyway, you know?
Right, but does he believe that, then? Because the show wasn't for Felix, it was for Oliver. If we're to believe the conclusion of the film, that his plan all along was to oust this family from their manor and wealth, then the show isn't for Felix. It's not for his benefit. It's for Oliver's benefit.
Right.
So he's not putting on a show for Felix. He's putting on a show for Felix in order to get something from Felix.
Yes. But I think he also wanted to tell Felix that everyone puts on a show for him.
Yes.
And
I get that.
Like, all those girls that he's hooking up with in the club don't actually love him.
It's just a parting shot.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Like, there's this lust for the rich that everyone has for this family, and particularly Jacob Elordi, that...
Right, speaking of just lust for Jacob Elordi, he's very hot in this movie.
Should we get into it?
We can get into
should
it.
We get it? Okay, we haven't finished the plot, but
fuck
I think...
Fuck the plot of this movie. Anyways, the coincidences, slowly the family continues to dwindle.
Yeah,
Venetia apparently kills herself in a bathtub.
She kills herself.
Farley is ejected from the family finally for
evicted from the family.
For doing cocaine, which I get everyone
that
was doing cocaine.
Everyone,
I don't understand.
There's no way coke was the worst thing being ingested during that party. Not just because Jacob Elordi drank poison and died.
Poison.
So I think.
Which, by the way, no way that doesn't show up in a fucking tox report. Like, they're doing a toxicology report. He's the son of a lord.
Yeah, I don't know. It's plot hole. I don't know.
There's a lot of plot holes in this,
there's plenty.
Movie. You don't need the plot of this movie to do the thing that you want to do with this movie, but, like, there's a couple things that are, like, almost world-breaking. Like,
yeah.
The fact that one of the richest families in England doesn't do a background check on someone.
This kid who's coming to literally live in their house.
Even after their children start dying.
Right. Right. But all right. Yes. Shall we talk about the boy?
Let's talk about the boy.
I think the two of us have an interesting, I don't know what word to use, but we both have different histories with Jacob Elordi. You having seen all of Euphoria, I have not. Me being a diehard Kissing Booth fan.
Yeah.
I have lost count of the number of times I've seen The Kissing Booth. It's more than 10, maybe 12.
It's part of the
12.
Part of the Jacob Elordi violent psychopath expanded universe.
But, point being, I never found him attractive in those movies.
Oh my god.
Not once.
I saw him in Euphoria.
Is he hot in Euphoria?
He's not.
I mean, he's scary in Euphoria,
he's
right?
He's genuinely disquieting in Euphoria at almost all times.
Yeah.
It's very funny how often he is menacing in Euphoria. I said watching the movie, he looked like, I used to think he looked like a melted doll a little bit. Like, he looks droopy.
Which is crazy when Barry Keoghan is right there.
Barry Keoghan, listen, hot take, Barry Keoghan, extremely fuckable. I think your perception of him is colored by him being a little freak.
He is a little freak.
Right, but that just means he's a little freak in the sheets.
What does Ludacris say? I want a lady in the streets, but a freak in the bed.
But freak in the bed. That's crazy.
It's something in the streets, but a freak in the bed.
As Rihanna puts it, I might be bad, but I'm perfectly good at it.
Oh, and Barry Keoghan is perfectly good at it. Yeah, no, this movie just gets Jacob Elordi right. I don't know.
I think it's the piercing.
The piercing does a lot.
The piercing does a lot,
when
especially
when he goes home and takes it off, I'm like, oh,
well, this is that's fun. When he's naked in a field. Also, his sister's hot. We disagree on that. Venetia, I think Venetia's a fucking smoke show in this movie.
Venetia does not do it for me. Mm. I'm sorry.
I have a track record of dating mentally ill women.
Jacob Elordi, though.
Oh, yeah, he's a peach in this.
That was a chef's kiss.
Jawline that could fucking knock the gods from the heavens.
And he, there's something, he's not pompous, even though he's rich and good-looking and everyone loves him.
No, he's the most down-to-earth of all of them, but he's also so clueless throughout.
There's a dumbness.
He needs to be told, he's not emotionally unintelligent, but he does need to be told things fairly often. Like, when he's arguing with Farley and then repeats phrases exactly that Farley has said to him.
Yes.
Farley comes in and is like, you don't want to, it's weird that I have to come to you with a begging bowl. And then he repeats that exactly to Venetia. Like he's been told something.
Which means he feels for Farley.
Obviously.
He definitely has he has that emotional depth to him and he's not selfish. But he also isn't good at expressing any of that.
Definitely not. But he's openly critical of the weirdness of his family.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He calls out his mother for not being a good person in the first scene she's introduced in.
What does he say?
He says, maybe because you're not a good person.
That's a good way to say that.
Rosamund Pike, also phenomenal in this movie.
She's so good.
Genuinely inhuman for most of the runtime.
Loved her in this movie.
Oh my god. She's got some killer lines in there.
Killer lines, killer outfits, killer hair.
Killer body.
Killer mummy. Thoughts on Rosamund?
Rosamund, I haven't seen her in a lot of stuff. Like, I haven't seen most of the performances.
If you like mentally ill women, she's got some movies for you.
Gone Girl. Gone Woman.
Gone Woman. We say Gone Woman because we're feminists on
obviously.
This podcast. I think Rosamund Pike is...
What was that line?
Very beautiful, but kind of too beautiful to be like...
What, like the house thing that Mel
said? Yeah, pretty house syndrome.
Pretty like a house.
Yeah. Which I mean, I think that's what makes her perfect for Gone Girl or this movie is the coldness for her.
I think
her.
You could do other people. I think you could do other British actresses, especially. There are a lot of people.
I think
Olivia Colman's maybe a little too old at this point, but she would have been great.
She would have been good.
It's like what if they had like a here's what we would do. I'm introducing my first character. They constantly reference a grandmother who is very clearly openly critical. Her mother, uh-huh. Rosamund Pike's character's mother, Elspeth's mother, is very clearly a ghost throughout this movie of like influencing Elspeth's behavior, influencing the coldness of that family.
And is she alive or dead?
She's dead. Okay. But when they're talking about Venetia's bulimia,
right.
She references comments that her grandmother made.
Oh, okay.
And I think if you add a grandmother character, and maybe that's the first death.
Like, the first death that we're supposed to assume.
The first death that we're supposed to assume that Oliver did. And that she is, like, onto him. She's, like a very clearly canny older person that has an interaction like the one outside in the field with Elspeth and Oliver. But is old to the point where, like, it's not out of left field that she dies.
Just die. Yeah. And they wouldn't do
a
body report.
Maybe replacing the part of someone like, what's her face? Carey Mulligan's character.
I don't remember the person's name. Bangs Girlina.
Bangs Artista.
They did her so dirty. I think Carey Mulligan.
I don't think I've seen her
beautiful.
In a lot of other things.
I think she's so pretty, but they did her so dirty. She was the main character in Promising Young Woman.
Oh.
So she's got a relationship with Miss Fennel.
Miss Fennel.
Yeah, well, I feel like that's maybe getting into the major problems that we have with this movie, which we will discuss in the ending.
Right.
So,
anyways.
The family members start dying off, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I am very, like, I am willfully naive when I'm watching movies. So even though I can tell that a twist is coming, like, the first time I'm watching this, I'm not actively thinking like, oh, obviously Oliver killed them.
As a viewer, you are supposed to assume by Venetia that he's killing them.
Yeah. I think even by that point, I didn't get it. But like, if I were actually like thinking about it hard, knowing that I would later be doing a podcast about it, I probably would have caught on by then. But I think that is the most people's major problem with this movie is that the ending, Barry Keoghan reveals in a monologue with some flashbacks.
Silly mask off.
he reveals, oh, it was me the whole time. I killed all of them.
And he basically says that.
Basically. And he said, did I love Felix? That's his name. Did I love Felix? I hated him. And then he's like, yeah, I fucking killed him because I hated him. And it's like, I think this is complex character than that.
It is.
So this is a big twist, like, oh my god, big twist. Oh my god, he hated him, he killed him the whole time. I think that is doing a disservice to the character.
Absolutely. I think it flattens.
Which, like, we can still read into that character despite that presentation of the twist. That, like, he did have some love for Felix, and that maybe it wasn't just lust for his power, and that's why he was licking the cum out of his drain and everything. But it's just, like, the way that it was presented as such a powerful twist that we're supposed to believe, like, oh, he actually hated him the whole time, even though I don't think that's true.
I think the tie-in with Oliver as many, like, fictional monsters, like, maybe, like I said earlier, the Minotaur, but explicitly, textually, he says, I'm a vampire at one point.
He does.
As an interesting, like, role reversal. Like, maybe the filmmakers want him to be the people's champion in a way of, like,
sure, yeah.
Vampires historically, especially literary vampires of, like, the Dracula and Carmilla and et cetera, are representations of the common folk's fear of power and wealth.
So it's a reversal.
It is a reversal, yeah, in a way. It's like it's that. Maybe like a, maybe a callback to an earlier form of the vampire myth. There was like the Revenant, which is like during the Black Plague, there were reports of like bodies rising from the dead.
Called the Revenant?
Yeah, those are Revenants.
Oh. Not like the movie.
Well, that's Snowy, it's just a Revenant just means someone who comes back from the dead.
Does he do that in that movie?
Well, he's buried.
Oh.
He's buried and then he gets up out of his grave and he fights a bear.
He's buried. Just like Archie Andrews in Riverdale. Have you seen that clip? Because it's Charles Melton and him. They're like in the locker room. Charles Melton is like, "What happened to you, bro?" And Archie Andrews goes, "I was attacked by a bear." And the other guy goes, "You were attacked by a freaking bear? Damn, no wonder you're so messed up." Anyway, little Riverdale sidebar.
Jasper I saw my eyes glaze over.
The sixth dimension right now.
I think I want to talk about, this might be sort of one-sided for a minute, but I want to talk about the style of this film, because a lot of the conversation has come into style over substance. I've seen like multiple videos in my recommended on YouTube about cinematography and style over substance in Saltburn and other things specifically. Like the ones they called out were The Idol and Saltburn and The Creator. I have a soft spot for The Creator.
Yeah.
It is so very clear that so much care and time
it's a gorgeous
went
movie.
Into creating the look of Saltburn. And I would not fucking shut up about it while we were watching this. Is that I think part of it is that it's a summer movie in a lot of ways.
It's very summery.
And a lot of the visual language they use to make it a summer movie is by jacking up their lighting ratio and making their color super crunchy. Like, it's super saturated. The blacks are very, very high in the mix. Like, you can see every pore, every outline of every object. Like, a leaf. There's a leaf in shot once, and you can see all the capillaries in the leaf.
Ooh, yeah. Very detailed, but also not how real life looks.
No,
which
definitely
I think is
not.
Very
which I think,
fun.
Yeah, it's extremely, extremely important as a distinction, where it cools down a lot when they leave Saltburn, especially for the road trip part.
It's super hot at Saltburn.
It's hot, and
all of like the grass is like a little bit yellow
and sickly.
Yeah,
like it's great.
Gnarly.
The visual storytelling of this film is phenomenal. Like, there's a bunch of stuff with the depth of shadows and the harshness of light and the willingness to blow out an actor's face with light to get a desired effect, especially when shooting on film, it's a risk that you need it's genuinely a risk these filmmakers are taking with something like that. When you don't know how it came out until you develop it, it's such a crazy risk, because for a movie with a relatively small budget, between $10-38 million, it's insane what they were able to do.
It's gorgeous
with lighting and with like color throughout is really, really great.
What do you think about the 4:3 or whatever ratio?
It's definitely a choice, but you lose sight of it very fast, I think.
I know. I think the first time I watched it, I was like, "Oh, that's weird." But then the second time, I was like, "Ooh."
I fully didn't remember that it was letterboxed.
Right.
Because
it still feels. I think like that aspect ratio can make you feel cramped or claustrophobic.
I think that was part of it, but it was also like nostalgia, probably.
Nostalgia,
Like home. A lot of the montage had like a very home video feel to it, which I think was definitely helped by like the grit of the film.
Yes.
And
the graininess.
Oh God, the grain. It's genuinely beautiful.
It's beautiful. Can we talk about the intro/title sequence?
Oh, the title sequence is very good. It's like glowing red, like red hot, like coals or something. It's very, very bright and out there.
One thing that we disagreed on, I love the little voiceover, like, montage bit at the very beginning.
The cold open.
I love that. I don't think you liked it, but I thought it was great, and I loved how it went into the title.
I feel like you're just giving away the trick at that point. Like,
what trick?
I liked the framing device of him talking to the camera, which turns out to be Elspeth in her hospital bed near the end. I think that showing what happens rapid fire at the beginning, so it sets up an expectation, which is very effective, but I think is also, like, not trusting your audience to figure out that it's going to be a weird movie from the jump.
Sure.
That he's just, the fact that he's just such, like, a freak throughout, I think is really, really great. That Oliver is such, like, a weird little guy for so much of the early movie into the late movie, obviously. But he gets more and more sinister and more soft-spoken, kind of, as the film goes on.
Yeah.
And that there are a lot of scenes where he's present but barely speaks.
Like in the beginning, you mean?
No, in the beginning, I think he talks a fair amount. But, like, in the end, when he's after Felix is dead,
he's more, like, lurking.
He's a spider.
Oh.
I think the spider moth thing is a little overwrought.
I think it kind of made me cringe.
It was overwritten, certainly.
Definitely overwritten.
It was a good performance.
Yeah, I think she did good. She said... She said he was like Spider-Man.
Mm. Her father calls him Spider-Man.
Which I think he means that he's acting like a spider.
Yes, but not the superhero.
It's not. Yeah, Tom Holland is not lurking in corners and spinning his, what did she say, spidery, Oliver-y webs.
Oliver-y was rough. Like, I think the script needed like a third pass, definitely.
There were lines that definitely made me cringe. I think the line, when we were rewatching, I think you were in the bathroom for this scene, but right after Felix's death, when they're eating at the table and it's all awkward, and they draw the curtains and it's all red, Farley starts like crying and he gets up to go and he's like, "What the fuck are we even doing? Like, my cousin just died. What the fuck is going on?" And Richard E. Gregg goes, you think you're the only one with emotions? We don't want your bloody American emotions." Which I don't know.
A little Emerald Fennel. Mask off a little bit there.
I don't know. I think there could be certainly some fun ways of poking fun at repression in English wealthy people culture. But I think that was a kind of heavy-handed way to say that.
Yeah, see, I think the character writing in this movie is phenomenal.
Sure.
I think genuinely that the character and the performance of all of the central cast is really, really great. But some of the lines they're working with are not there. And I think the overall structure is not there either.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like almost Shyamalan-esque, the twist. In, like, almost. That it's just thrown in and doesn't feel central. Like, it's designed to, like, catch you by surprise. Like, you're obviously supposed to, I think, get, like I said, by Venetia that he's killing them.
Sure.
But not that, more that it's a defense mechanism of people are finding out that I'm doing bad things, I'm killing them. Instead of, this has been maybe years in the making.
Literally. Yeah. I think that's the major, if I did it, of this movie, is I would make the twist, quote-unquote, be less sudden, and I would make it be more spaced out in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think the trip on his birthday, we get the twist of... Oh, his parents are both alive, and they're upper middle class, and they're totally fine. They love him. They're not addicted to drugs. I thought that was a great twist. Like, that surprised me. I don't know if it surprised everyone who watched it, but...
It got me.
Yeah.
It is surprising because there's actually no way we could get it.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is that there's no... it's subversion instead of surprise. Like,
yes,
you had no way of knowing that he was lying. There was never really any, I think, here's another if I did it. If he had more interaction with what's her face, the artist friend, the down on her luck lady, and she, her, the redhead bangs.
Oh, yes.
If he had more interaction with her and she sort of caught him in like a lie somehow,
I think that would
that
be
hints
a
to the audience somehow.
That.
There's like
that something's wrong.
That maybe she's from Liverpool and he's like he's supposed to be from Liverpool. And he's supposed to be like very obviously poor and from a drug. Like a drug affected family.
He's a scholarship boy.
He's a scholarship.
Buys his clothes at Oxfam.
I don't know what Oxfam is, but that seemed like the most cutting insult of all time.
It's like a thrift store or something. I don't
know. It's probably. But I think that points to a lot of the thing that like the twist is designed to shock and not to make sense.
Yeah.
It's
like Mark Wahlberg seeing the ape. Abraham Lincoln statue at the end of Planet of the Apes. It's like, oh my god, and then the movie ends. Like,
I think it does end up like really, like I said earlier, like we said earlier, the twist at the end sort of ends up cheapening a lot of the thing.
Yes.
Because it's like, does he, who is a lot of the stuff for that he does not observed by other people? If he is like coherent enough to plan out something over 15 years.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be, you're not fucking dirt. Like you're not fucking dirt for nobody's benefit unless it's just you. And you're also, so you're a genius planner and able to space a plan out, able to wait 15 years, which is, this is a, I think a major problem with the story.
Yeah. It makes literally no sense.
Is that from between him leaving Saltburn and the end of the film, there's a 15-year time jump.
Yes, which was not made
or made
abundantly
at least
clear.
At least 10.
When we were watching it, we were like, oh, that's weird. There are people with disposable face masks on.
I thought it was a production
background.
Error.
Yeah. That there's just, like, random people, like, it's mid-COVID, and there's just random people walking around outside. Turns out, according to our lovely researcher, Mel...
our researcher.
There's a newspaper that said 2022. Literally no sense.
I think cohesion is a huge problem in this movie.
Yes.
Of, like, the Oliver before the twist and the Oliver after the twist are not, maybe not the same. Like,
which I think it is what makes the movie fun, to me at least, is to reckon with that and be like, so these are the same person?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is both very manipulative and very emotional.
Yeah.
I took notes while watching this movie. I made a list of signs of manipulation and moments of emotion. And the signs of manipulation, he talks with Elspeth and starts talking shit. And that makes her open up to him about Venetia's bulimia, all that jazz. He performs oral sex with Venetia and tells her to stop being bulimic.
And feeds her own period blood.
How into the sex stuff are we getting on this podcast?
I don't know.
Yeah. I also have to be in the library in half an hour. We still have time.
Yeah, we have time. I think the sex stuff is, I think a lot of the problem with, like I said, cohesion is that the difference of, is this for a character? Is this informing a character?
Right.
Or is it for the audience to shock and disquiet you? Like, does Oliver fuck the dirt because he wants to fuck the dirt? Or does Oliver fuck the dirt because Emerald Fennel wants us to watch Oliver fuck the dirt? Does he lick cum out of a drain because that's who he is? Or does he lick cum out of a drain because Emerald Fennel thinks that's a wild thing for you to see?
Crazy.
Does he want to eat this period pussy, or does he just is that weird and we need to know that this guy is weird?
Sure. Well, according to my lists, My reading of it is him eating out Venetia was him being manipulative. But everything that he does with Felix felt more... I mean, he's not doing anything for Felix. Mm-hmm. Like, he's drinking the cum water for himself. He's fucking the dirt for himself. I think those were signs of his own emotion and his own obsession with Felix. Maybe you would say love. I don't know.
Yeah.
He punches the mirror, I think.
He does.
After... When is that again?
That's after...
Is it after he eats out?
No, something with Farley. It's after something with Farley. I don't remember.
Oh, is it after the party where Farley makes him do the karaoke song?
It's extremely possible that that's it.
Yeah. But anyway, like, who's he doing that for? He's just mad, so he punched a mirror.
Yeah.
You know? Were you going to say something?
Yeah, I think that... with all this stuff, the fact that there is, like... It's a movie about class. It's a movie about... Or is it a movie about class, really? Like, is it a movie about class? Is it a weird people or, like, rich people are weird movie? I don't think it is.
No.
I think...
And I don't think it was ever trying.
I don't think it was either. But it is trying to... I don't think it's saying enough. Like, it's saying something, but I don't know if it even knows what it's saying. Like...
Yeah.
I think a conclusion before that is... Before the twist could be, this is a mentally ill boy who sees power and grows attached to it, and then it's a with there are hints of it being a story about class infighting with characters like Duncan the butler and Farley commenting on the race of the footmen. And
oh yeah, that's
that there are constantly workers. There are constantly. Groundskeepers and servants in the background of shots unaddressed.
But and I think that's important for the...
It's not... It's definitely important for the feel of a movie about classism, but they don't engage.
Sure.
Like, I don't think the movie is saying enough if it wants that title of a movie about classism. It's not doing, like... It's not doing as much as it could. I think it wants to sound like it is, but it's not...
I guess so. I don't know. I feel like it's not so much trying to be a movie about society.
I don't think it's about society. I think it's about these... I think it boils down to rich people don't care about things, and then rich people don't care about other people, but... the problem with that is... The final sort of point of Oliver's character seems to be wealth is a thing that people desire and will commit violence to obtain.
Yeah.
Which is not, like, deep or, like, great storytelling.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's deep, but I think they just play with that a lot. Like, they play with that lust by making it literal lust, not just being hungry for money.
I think the themes of consumption are interesting in this. Of, like, obviously there's drinking and drugs, but also he eats pussy with the period. It
makes her eat the blood.
Drinks cum. Fucks dirt. There's a lot, like, the connection between consumption and sexuality is an interesting thing that I'm personally fascinated with. Which is why I like my, like, cannibalism movies.
We're discussing, as we were watching, whether Barry had put a condom on before he put his wiener in the dirt. Because it, like, how and why would he put a condom on? But also, if he didn't,
he's getting
stuff
dirt.
Is going up.
He's getting dirt in the pee hole.
Yeah.
It's going to be a painful, painful time.
Yeah, no thank you.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think it's a good movie. It's not bad movie, but it's not... I think it wants to be recognized as, like, a makes-you-think movie, but it doesn't really bring a lot to the table with that.
Sure. I would generally agree with that, which I think is why so many critics and, like, movie people, like, capital M, capital P, like... think this is a bad movie, but I think it's doing enough that it's really fun to watch. I did not feel the runtime at all.
No, when we were it's a very well-paced movie.
Yeah, it was very fun. I mean, it's more than 2 hours. It's not the longest movie in the world, but like...
It's like 2 hours, 10 minutes.
Just about, yeah.
It's like the new 90 minutes, I feel like.
Yeah, which, like, I don't know, I'm fine with. Can we talk about Barry Keoghan?
Let's.
Before we sign off. So how many things have you seen him in?
Banshees. I've definitely seen him in other stuff, too.
But yeah. Like,
Banshees is the one that springs to mind, and he was truly phenomenal.
He was great in that movie.
Also,
I took some notes on his IMDb. I think, like, from what I can tell, and from what I saw in, like, the video that he did about his biggest career moments, I think Killing of a Sacred Deer was huge for him. I have not seen it, so I can't make any statements, but apparently he played just a freaky little boy. And someone said to him, some executive or someone, I forget, said, you should play the Joker after that performance.
And then, lo and behold.
And then, what? Yeah, but in between those, he was in The Green Knight.
Oh, he was good in The Green... He was the little kid in The Green Knight.
He's the little freaky dude.
Yeah.
Wait, so you've seen The Green Knight?
I have seen The Green Knight. I love The Green Knight. And I felt a lot of The Green Knight sort of... It's a similar energy, like a psychosexual thriller dynamic.
Yeah, very
dynamic.
Psychosexual. Yeah, for me personally, I don't know how you felt about his scene in The Green Knight. Like, he shows up on that field and starts talking to Dev Patel. Like, I know something's up. Like, this kid is not normal.
I think he's got an energy to him. I think I've just sort of realized something with that is, like, when I thought he was, like, a fairy in I thought he was, like, a fae. I'll say fae instead.
Better.
I thought he was, like, a fae, like an old, deep forest, like, spirit.
He looks like a creature.
But he has that same energy. He's, like, picking a battlefield. He's, like, death in that movie, I think.
Is he?
I think he's, like, a representation of death in that movie.
Okay.
I feel that, anyways.
I
could definitely
can't
be wrong.
It.
About
I haven't seen that movie in long enough.
He's picking the battlefield. He's a child affected by war in a way.
Yeah, that's
he's,
true.
And he represents both the leaving and the return of Gawain in The Green Knight.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
Yeah, but I thought he was so just like disturbing looking. Like his energy was so weird and off-putting that movie. Banshees of Inisherin, he's a total sweet, like, he's a little puppy.
He's so sad in that movie.
He's so sad.
I love
him.
And
he never looks creepy once. He's just, he's in love with this girl, and she's like, no, and he's like, oh, okay. And he goes, there goes that dream.
Fuck me. And then he kills himself.
And then he dies.
Or is murdered by his father.
Is he?
It's possible. His father beats him, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
Barry.
Barry.
What are you doing? Yeah, and then he's been this really weird, would you call it a character actor? But then this movie was
I'd
his first real leading role.
I think this is his meatiest role by far.
Oh, for sure.
But
it's like, if it weren't so, like, Emerald Fennel, I would think this was some kind of, like, Barry Keoghan passion project, you know?
It's very possible. I mean, is he a producer?
I have no idea. I don't think I...
It should say right there.
Produced by Margot Robbie.
Whoa.
Hello?
Margot Robbie's been a patron of a lot of projects as of recent, I think.
Oh.
Okay,
yeah. It's only listing him as, like, the star of the movie. Yeah, but I don't know. He just, it's like, it just feels like such a movie that he really put his heart and soul into. Yeah, and now he's gonna be the Joker.
I'm the Joker, baby. I think that's gonna be genuinely terrible. I don't think he's gonna be bad in it, but I think the Joker's been done so many times. Like, pick a new Batman lane. Like, I think the Riddler was a really great first pick for the
shout
new...
Shout out Paul.
Yeah. Paul. We know your feelings with Paul.
Oh, I mean, I think we have to do a Paul Dano movie.
Paul Dano.
Sooner rather than later. Yeah.
What should we do?
I mean, we have so many. Oh my God, Love and Mercy.
Love and Mercy. I think we should do Little Miss Sunshine.
That'd be cute.
It's a very good movie.
And it's like kind of deep too. Mm-hmm. And we both like it a lot.
That little girl is a super freak.
Super freak. Yeah, I don't know. I like Barry Keoghan a lot, especially after this movie, even if I think he's a freaky little man and looking at his face kind of upsets me.
I love his face. I don't know why I'm in the minority here.
No, well, this is the thing. I think, okay.
He's got character.
He's got character, and he's like, I don't mean this, Barry, if you're listening. I don't want to be mean.
If you're listening.
He's not attractive, but he's got some weird, raw sexual charisma to him.
I think that's what he does in the movie. That's what is happening in the movie. He lines up a fucking Babe Ruth called shot with Elspeth out in that field, and he's like, maybe Venetia has such a hard time because you're so fucking beautiful. And he does the eyebrows at her, and she's like, I think she thinks about it for a second. She's like,
What if he came up to you and said that?
I'd let him do whatever to me. I'd let him treat me like I was that fresh grave.
Would you let him put your blood in your mouth?
If blood's coming out of me, that's not a good thing. I don't think I want blood to be involved in a sexual experience, but hey, Barry.
Shout out, Barry.
Shout out, Barry.
We love you, Barry. Keep doing what you're doing. I hope his Joker is good. Did they, like, have a specific movie, like, lined up? Like,
no, I think he's just the next Batman villain.
Like, when they make a new...
When they make another... Robert Pattinson. When they make another Pattinson.
Pattinson. I
saw him in The Lighthouse again, recently. Did you rewatch that? Yeah, I watched The Lighthouse when AMC did rescreenings through
A24. Oh, okay.
I saw it in theaters.
I would love to see that in theaters.
Very, very good.
Oh, I would love to.
Very, very good. Thomas had an extra ticket.
Okay.
I could have gotten in for free, actually, because I pay A24 for the privilege of them allowing me to pay them more money.
And the beautiful card in your wallet that says A24.
A24 member. Baby. Triple A24. A24 All Access. They have the app, though, and I was able to... if you buy Blu-rays, you can stream them from the app.
Oh, okay.
Which is cool.
Yeah, that's
I bought Aftersun.
Nice.
I got an Aftersun Blu-ray.
Oh, really?
For Christmas.
Are you going to rewatch that movie?
Yes.
Oh my God.
You don't like that movie?
No, I loved it. I also didn't finish it, but it just made me so sad.
It's heartbreaking. Oh. But I have a soft spot about movies that depict divorce as like a normal thing that people deal with.
Yes.
Instead of like a world shattering.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and I think that movie has a really nice, unique take on it.
Like, I never had an experience of having a single father, because my father was, got in a relationship pretty soon after.
Yeah, and you were young, right?
I was very young. Yeah. I was 2 years old. Yeah. But I had an experience of being a child around the girl's age with a single mother and going on vacations with a single mother and driving long distance with a single mother. And a lot of that feeling of having a single parent and, like, the real, like, pain, heartache that feels as an adult, like...
Mm. Like looking back
at that and not realizing how hard it must have been every time you drive home with an empty car after having your kid with you for some period of time.
Yeah, yeah.
And you go back to an empty house. Like, that's fucking sad.
That is sad.
And there's a couple movies like that. I watched... I was unable to watch the first Before Sunset?
That's the second.
Or Before Sunrise?
You said you also couldn't watch Before Sunrise.
I skipped Before Sunset. I wasn't able to watch Before Sunrise because Ethan Hawke was too annoying. And I was not able to watch the third one because I ripped my fucking heart out and stomped on it in the first 30 minutes. I wanted to jump from a balcony watching the scene of them... A marriage on the rocks in a fucking road trip. Him dropping his son off at the thing. Ethan Hawke, notable divorced father player. In like another movie, Juliet Naked, very good movie. I think we should discuss that at some point.
I thought you were saying that he's a divorced father in real life.
Oh, he is. Isn't
true.
He? Yeah.
Shout out Maya Hawk.
Yeah. Baddie. She makes music. Did you know that?
Does she?
Yeah.
All the Stranger Things kids are making music, man. Mm.
Some of them shouldn't.
Which one? Say it.
Chokiri.
No.
I don't like DJO. I don't like DJO.
I like the one song. I don't like any of the other songs.
I think Finn Wolfhard's music's pretty good.
I love Finn
Wolfhard's There's a whole movie about it. When you finish saving the world, he's a musician.
Okay.
He's that's Julianne Moore and him. It's supposed to be very, very good,
Shout
I've heard.
Shout out Calpurnia. Also, speaking of divorce movies, next week, Chef, starring
Ooh, Chef, yes.
John
Chef
Favreau?
Will be, I'll be happy about Chef.
Yeah.
I love Chef. I like movies about food. Like, food is such a tactile thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And there wasn't a lot of food in this.
Yeah, all the food looked disgusting because they're British people.
I've got you a crunchy.
His little freak math friend.
Okay, he got him a crunchy.
Yeah, we should get our little freak math friend on the pod.
Give her a crunchy and
Give her
say,
a crunchy.
You're gonna eat that, mate. Oi. Yeah.
Closing thoughts? Anything else you would do if we did it?
If we did it. Yeah, I mean, I would, make the plot less M. Night adjacent. I think making it more of a slow, creeping reveal that Barry Keoghan has been killing them would be more fitting and also more, like, effective, I think. I think it would be more of, like, a creepy kind of dread feeling if it's like, oh, like, maybe did he kill Jacob Elordi? Okay, it kind of seems like he killed Venetia. And then we, like, see him at the end, like, pulling out the tube from fucking Rosamund Pike.
Yeah.
I think that would be better.
I think adding, like I said earlier, adding a death at the beginning, another yeah. death. Like, or spinning the artist friend's death to
yes.
be like, did... Because if there's a weird interaction with them... He kills her because she's suspicious, but is disconnected enough from that that we don't know about it until, like, people start dying and we're like, oh, did he kill her?
Yeah.
Which is what I kind of thought earlier, remember
yeah,
I told
yeah.
you.
Yeah, I think that would be a more fun movie.
I think...
Yeah, anything else?
Yeah, if I did it, I'd add more... Music, I think. The music was such truly an amazing part of this.
Yes.
And I think it really set it in, like, a time and place.
Yeah.
I think adding more of that, like, pop music would be really nice. Like,
there's some great pop music.
There is some really... I'd take out Mr.
Great.
Brightside, honestly.
Aww.
I like Mr. Brightside a lot. They could have been singing a different song.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know. I feel like Mr. Brightside is such a specific mood of, like... This is what you and your bro sing in the car
mm-hmm.
when you're on a road trip.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. I'd put some more British music in, maybe.
Yeah. Is, what's it called? Is MGMT not British?
I don't think so. I don't know. I could be wrong. But, I throw some Oasis in there. They talked about Oasis in the movie and how Elspeth maybe inspired a song.
That, yeah, actually, that would be a really funny needle drop.
Just over the credits.
After all, you're my
so
underworld.
Sally can wait.
Okay, you're bringing out the deeper cuts. I don't know that
don't
much.
Don't look
Oasis.
Back in anger.
Anyway, I like this movie. Do you like this movie?
I do like this movie.
I like this movie. I'm glad I saw it twice. I think.
Yeah, seeing it multiple times granted perspective.
Yeah.
And now I get to watch all my videos on it.
All your videos?
All the videos that I've been seeing.
I was holding off on
watching them until we did the pod.
Oh, okay. Well, that's nice. Yeah, I mean, in general, I think I'm glad that a movie like this exists. I'm glad that Amazon is funding movies like this. Shout out Jeff.
Jeff. Big Jeff. They should make a movie about killing Jeff.
Aren't they making, like, a biopic of him?
Yeah, but it's not about killing him. It's not about Barry Keoghan dancing naked around his house.
Imagine they make a biopic of Jeff Bezos and it ends with his death. Someone murders him. It's like a Jeff Bezos 1.5.
one and a half.
Like, it's all of his life so far, and then the predicted death.
That's awesome.
Guys.
That's perfect.
A24, drop the regular biopic.
A24, bang my line. A24.
Jasper's right here.
I'm right
he
here.
He won't even do it for that much money.
Listen, I'll give you guys the Civil War movie that's releasing soon. I'm so excited for that movie. I'm genuinely so excited for that movie. You think it's gonna suck?
I don't know if it's gonna suck or not. I think I'm never going to watch it because it would make me upset.
I'm gonna watch it.
Are you gonna go to theaters?
I think it's gonna be like a Don't Look Up. Shut up.
Your body was like, don't say it.
I think this is, I had a visceral bodily reaction to Don't Look Up. I hate Don't Look Up
is a movie that does think it's saying a lot objectively, and it's not saying that much. This movie is more up in the air.
I think this movie is, I think it's like a popular movie disguising itself as an art house movie.
Sure.
It's a thriller.
But why do we need to have that line between the two? You know?
It's an academic distinction. Third cinema.
But like.
Or first versus second cinema. Sorry, I got confused about my third cinema. This is not a third cinema movie. This is whatever the opposite of third cinema is.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, like.
It's like fifth cinema.
It's an Amazon produced movie. It's an erotic thriller. I think it is a popular movie just by nature. Mm. But I think popular movies like that should feel more free to be
artistic,
all beautiful, and artsy and weird and four.
Yeah,
like
shout out Linus Sandgren. Truly,
is he the guy
a name to watch? He's the director of photography.
I see.
A name to watch, I think. Unless he's done a bunch of shit that I didn't know about, but
he's been around for like 30
years. He did Casablanca. they resurrected his corpse to get him to do this movie. Really, really phenomenal cinematography. If you're not going to walk away with anything else from that, it's like...
It's just well made.
It's just a beautiful film.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful film. It's beautifully acted.
Yeah.
Maybe not beautifully written, but...
The writing is fun enough for it to be a good movie, considering those other things that are good about it.
Yeah, definitely.
Can't wait to see more from Barry Keoghan.
Mm-hmm.
I think he did a great job with this movie. I hope Jacob Elordi gets more piercings. He's so hot in this movie. You know what I hope? I hope Jacob Elordi stops trying to do American accents. That's what I hope.
Yeah, the accent was fun in this movie.
Yes, very good. I gotta go, so we should...
All right, let's wrap it up. For anyone who's still still here, this has been the If We Did It podcast. All right, we're taking that again. For anyone still around,
thank you for listening.
Thanks.
We appreciate you.
We love you.
And we'll be back.
All right.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.